Welcome to the How to Love Show with Dr. Mike. Dr. Michael McGee here, your host. And today we have somebody who has spent many, many years mastering the art of loving and the art of living. And his name is Bill Ferguson. Welcome to our show, Bill.
Well, hi there. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you. Yes, yes. Let's start, if you don't mind, Bill, by telling our audience a little bit about yourself.
Oh, gosh, where do you begin? I started out as a divorce attorney, and my focus was on having my clients heal their relationship with each other, not save their marriage, but just heal their relationship, just one human being to another, because it made the legal work a lot easier. And I learned a lot about creating the experience of love in relationships, I closed law practice and put all my focus on doing programs, writing books, and it just evolved. I first started learning about how to create that experience of love and relationships. And then I started seeing it's not just about creating the experience of love and relationships, it's about having that experience of love in all of life. And I started learning, you know, what destroys it and what messes everything up and how to have a great life. And it's not difficult, but you got to look at life in a different way.
How so? How do you feel that we need to look at life differently?
Well, we live in a culture where all the focus is outside of us. It's all on the circumstances. You know, he said, she said. But you see, we think that our happiness and upsets come from outside of us, but that's an illusion that'll keep us stuck forever. You know, happiness doesn't ever come from outside of us. It comes from within us. You know, and when you shift how you relate to life, you change what happens around you.
And how do you recommend sort of, I mean, if happiness doesn't come from outside, where does happiness come from?
Well,
what are the sources of happiness in your experience?
Well, let's first look at relationships, because when you can see it in relationships, it becomes a whole lot easier to see it in life.
There you go.
Okay, so one thing I learned as a divorce attorney is that love never, 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 never is love enough to have a relationship work.
Mm.
You know, the divorce court are full of people that love each other.
Mm.
You know, so if I love you, let's say you're my brother. Well, if I love you and I treat you lousy, so what if I love you?
But is that love? I mean, I think of love as really acting to benefit another person. If you cause harm to somebody or don't treat them well, I would think that's not loving.
Well, yes, but the thing that's important is the experience of love. If I interact with you in a way where you feel loved, our relationship's going to be great. And if I interact with you in a way where you feel unloved, our relationship's going to be a mess.
Yes.
So
yes.
If I want my relationship with you to be great, it's up to me. I need to make sure
right.
you feel loved.
To figure out a way to help another person feel loved by your.
Well, basically, what creates the experience of love is giving the gift of acceptance and appreciation.
Absolutely.
Which ultimately is nothing more than surrendering to the truth. Because you're you, whether I like it or not. You know, I can love the way you are. I can hate the way you are. It isn't going to change a thing. You're still you. But if I can let you be the you that you're going to be anyway, you know, accept you for who you are and add a little bit of appreciation, then what happens is you feel empowered. You know, you feel loved. You feel better about yourself. You feel better about life. Your walls of protection come down around me because you don't need them. And then automatically, you then become more accepting and appreciative of me. And then I feel empowered, and I feel better about you, and you feel better about me, and I feel better about you. And then we create that cycle of loving, supporting, and empowering each other that brings out the best in everybody.
Yeah, I think that's so well said. It can be very, very difficult to accept and appreciate people who are being harmful. I think that's something that can be very, very challenging. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, it's all about surrendering to the truth. So, some people were very destructive.
Yes.
But you still got to surrender to the truth of the way they are. Because, see, at any moment, what so is always, always, always what so.
Right. Everything is as it must and can only be, right?
Yeah. Well, when you're at peace with the truth of the way things are,
yeah,
it doesn't mean you like it, but when you have that inner peace, you automatically look in a direction where solutions and opportunity and possibility show up. You can see,
yeah,
what you need to do.
Right.
So give me,
right,
an example. My wife and I have a black and white cat, and that cat won't bark. And I can yell at the cat and plead with the cat and scream at the cat, and it just doesn't make any difference because no matter what I do, that cat isn't going to bark. That's a fact. Okay, if I,
right,
can surrender to that truth, and if I want to hear barking, what do I need to do? Go get a dog. You see, but if, and,
yeah,
and you look at the areas of life that work great, those are areas where you can flow with whatever happens.
You know, I think about my own recent divorce, Bill, after 24 years of marriage, and really just coming to a place of acceptance of my ex-wife, but just realizing that the relationship just was not workable.
Yes.
And it wasn't good for each of us. And then even though the divorce was very traumatic, in my own heart, I had my own sense of just deep acceptance and appreciation,
yes,
for who my ex-wife was. But so you're right. You can do this in a way, and then make a decision about what's best for you and the other person. But
well, that's just it. Because when you have peace, you make decisions and take action based on fact instead of emotion.
Right.
See, but when, right, we're in a state of turmoil, a state of upset, it's not about facts. It's all about emotion. It's all about hurt.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and
how
then
did
what
you
happens?
No, go ahead.
What happens in relationships? You know, most relationships start out great. You got that cycle of loving, supporting, empowering each other, and then you know I've got a great relationship with this woman, but you see, no matter how great it is, it's just a matter of time until our hurt from the past gets triggered. So she does what she does, strikes a nerve in me. I don't notice that I've got a nerve being triggered. The only thing I notice is what triggered it, which is her. Subconsciously, I perceive her as a threat. And then as a subconscious defense mechanism, I become non-accepting, judgmental, critical to her. And that's what destroys love. You need to change. You mess up. What's your problem? What is the matter with you? And then I radiate non-acceptance, triggers her hurt. She gets hurt. She gets upset. She puts up her walls and then gives it back to me. And then I give it to her, she gives it to me, I give it to her, she gives it to me. And instead of creating a cycle of loving, supporting, and empowering each other, you know, we create a cycle of conflict, a cycle of hurting, attacking, and withdrawing from each other. And the thing that I noticed about that cycle of conflict is that it is physically impossible to have a cycle of conflict with one person. It's like a tennis volley, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And when you change how you relate to the other person, it literally changes how that other person responds to you. It only takes one person to end the cycle of conflict.
Do you have any practical techniques for people who are engaged in this kind of cycle of conflict? It's one thing to say to accept and appreciate another person, but do you have some ideas of some really practical ways? When you welled up in a lot of pain and hurt that you perceive coming from the other person, getting some distance and separation from that to get to a place of acceptance and appreciation can be very difficult.
Yeah, you got to get rid of the hurt. And for one thing, always, 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 every single time, what's underneath anger is hurt.
That's right.
Anger, resentment, and blaming are all defense mechanisms. They're focusing over there on the other person, so we don't have to look at ourselves, so we don't have to feel our hurt.
Yes.
Why we,
yeah,
can't be at peace with the truth is because the truth hurts. It strikes a nerve. And ultimately what the nerve is that childhood hurt of feeling worthless, not worth loving, not good enough, failure, don't count, don't matter, something like that. And it's never the truth. But in the eyes of a little child, it becomes our truth, and then we spend the whole rest of our life running from it. And if anything comes along and triggers that hurt, that circumstance that triggers it is going to be perceived subconsciously as a major threat, so we're going to have to either attack it or run from it. But we misidentify the threat. The threat is not the circumstance, not really. The threat is all the hurt that's being triggered.
Right. If somebody says to you, you know, you're just an inconsiderate slob or something like that, that can be very hurtful. But the hurt is much more deep if it goes back to childhood trauma, that there really is that deep belief that somehow you're an unworthy, unlovable person.
Yeah, because what happens is, like, we're born pure love, you know, but we're born into a world that kills it. So in the process of growing up, every single one of us experiences very, very painful losses of love. We experience rejection, invalidation. You know, we get hurt, and we get hurt a lot. And as a little child, the only way we can explain these painful losses of love is to blame ourselves. Clearly,
right,
it's the problem.
Right, it's our fault.
It's our fault. And then we decide specifically what that fault is. I'm not good enough. I'm not worth loving. I'm worthless. I'm a failure. And it's never the truth. But in the eyes of a little child, it becomes our truth. And then we fight the belief that we created, and we fight all the emotion associated with it, which turns it into a nightmare, magnifies it way out of proportion.
That makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense. Yes, it's really true. So to come to this place of acceptance and appreciation of other people who are being hurtful to us, perhaps, there's a need to really identify that the hurt we're experiencing is linked in some ways to very early childhood hurts, and in some ways to not really, to really own that our hurt response is not necessarily linked completely to the person who we experience as being hurtful to us. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. See, no circumstance has the ability to create an upset. All a circumstance can do is strike a nerve that's already there.
Right.
And a good way to see this is to find a time in your life when you've been upset. Notice something happened. And notice that it happened no matter how we feel about it, no matter how much we hate what happened, it still happened. Then notice what would happen to the upset if somehow you were at peace with the truth of what happened. The upset would disappear. Because upsets are not caused by what happens. Upsets are caused by our fighting what happens. And why we fight what happens is because what happens hurts, strikes a nerve.
Right. Yeah, so, I mean, I can imagine being hurt on two different levels. I mean, I can imagine, you know, say, hey, if somebody says, oh, you know, you're really an asshole, let's say, and that would be hurtful no matter what, no matter who you are, that would be, for unless you're very, very evolved, that would on some level be a hurtful remark that would.
Well, one thing that I found is the exact same thing can happen to 50 different people, and there will be 50 different reactions. There may be many that are similar, but everyone's going to react differently because each person has a different set of suppressed emotion. It gets triggered.
Yeah. Right. Well, I was thinking that, you know, that on some level it's hurtful, but if you're highly evolved, then you don't take that personally, and you just see that as somebody else's experience of you, and maybe there might not be any hurt at all.
Well, that's hard to do.
Very difficult.
See, what's so important, any time you have a difficult time, or you have a painful relationship, top priority is to get your peace back. Because when you get your peace back, you see clearly, you can see what you need to do.
Yeah.
Okay, that person's the way that person is, but I don't want to spend any time with them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the cat doesn't bark. Well, okay, that's a fact. What do I need to do? That's where you want to get to. But to get there, there's a number of steps that are so important. One of them is you want to find what is the nerve that's being triggered.
That early childhood trauma, perhaps.
Yes, yes. What does that circumstance say about you? And it's and so you're looking for an emotion. You're not looking for a fact. You're looking for an emotion. And the emotion is always going to be some form of not okay, not good enough,
right.
Worthless, failure, something like that.
Yeah.
So look and see what's the circumstance that you're fighting, and then look and see, okay, what does that circumstance say about me? Not in the truth, but in an emotion.
Right.
And,
right.
And don't look and see, is it true, because it's got nothing to do with the truth. Instead, look to see if that were true, would that be painful? And the more
right.
painful it would be, the more it runs our lives.
Right, right.
So if somebody leaves me, then on the surface I'm resisting the circumstance called that person's leaving. But at a deeper level, I'm not resisting their leaving. I'm resisting all that feeling of being worthless, not worth loving, not good enough to be loved, that gets triggered by their leaving.
Right, exactly.
See,
so
the
really
more I become willing to feel
link,
that
right?
hurt, the more the circumstance disappears as a threat.
Right, right. Boy, that takes a lot of deep work to be able to sort of see those links to those deep feelings.
Well, it's actually pretty fast once you know where to look.
Uh-huh.
And real bottom line, see, what gives the hurt power is fighting it. What has it lose power is to do the opposite of fighting it, which is to own it and embrace it.
Yes, face and embrace, right?
Say that again.
Face and embrace, right?
Yes, yes. Feel the hurt willingly like a child and own that part of you. Because, see, there's nothing you can do to get rid of worthless or whatever the issue is, because ultimately it's just a thought, it's a judgment. And everything you do to get rid of it validates it, magnifies it, gives it more power. You cannot get rid of it, but what you can do is you can take away its relevance and be so what about it. And in the so what, it loses power. So you want to find what the hurt is, you know, worthless, not good enough, or whatever, and then make peace with that part of you.
Right.
And then as you make peace with it, something comes along and triggers it. It won't get triggered to the extent you own it.
When you see those, I'm going to use the word for, just because of our topic of love here, I'm going to use the word unlovable. When you see that painful feeling of being somehow unlovable,
yes,
and you own that, oh, there's a feeling of being unlovable, and you accept that feeling is there, do you see a role for self-compassion in terms of holding that painful feeling?
Well, for sure, because the more you own your humanness, the more you have compassion for other people in their humanness.
Yes.
See, because no judgment is real. Judgment is always, it's relative. It's a point of view. Good enough compared to what? It only exists in the realm of thinking. But in the realm of thinking, all judgment is there. In the realm of thinking, you're worthy and you're worthless. You're smart, you're stupid, you're brave, you're coward, you're lovable, you're unlovable. But if there's any aspect of you that you're not at peace with, that's going to run your life, because you're going to go through life trying to prove it's not true.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to be threatened by life. You're going to act destructively and create more of the very hurt you're trying to escape. So everything we do to get rid of it validates it, magnifies it, gives it more power.
Right. Whereas yeah. accepting and facing and embracing really takes that away, or it allows you to hold it in a larger context of compassion.
Yeah, because it is there, and whatever the aspects are of ourselves that we're not at peace with, life is forever going to be putting it in our face. But it's putting
That's
it
right.
in our face so that we can own them, and once you own it, then life doesn't need to bring it to you anymore.
Right. Yeah.
You know, an example I use with people, I do a lot of individual work with people, and when I work with them, you know, I have them look at coward, because most people do not have an issue with coward. Yeah, so if you're worthless, that would be very painful. If you're a coward, it wouldn't be so painful. Well, where you want to get to is you want to get to the place where worthless, not worth loving, or whatever your issue is as irrelevant as coward.
Right, right, where it's just not, to see truly that that is not the truth, the feeling is not the truth of things.
Yeah, but even, yeah. But more than that, you want to get to the so what of it.
Mm.
Because in the human experience, it is there. In my reality, worthless is there. Not good enough is there. Failure is there. And to the extent I own these aspects of me, they lose power, and I become very human. And the irony is, the more I allow my humanness, the more life works incredibly.
Yes, yes. And humanness and humility are closely related, I would think, in terms
yes,
of that
absolutely.
Ownership.
Yes, absolutely.
Absolutely. Well, listen, Bill, this is wonderful. We're going to take a short break here, and we'll come back and continue this discussion, okay?
Great.
You're listening to the How to Love Show with Dr. Mike, Dr. Michael McGee here with our wonderful guest, Bill Ferguson, sharing his great wisdom about healing and loving. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this break. Welcome back to the How to Love Show with Dr. Mike. We have our guest here, Bill Ferguson, with us, who has done work on mastery of life and has written a book, many books, I believe, and one of them most recently is Get Your Power Back, and it's really has worked over many, many years on mastering the art of loving and being loved. Welcome back, Bill.
Oh, it's good to be back.
You know, tell us a little bit about how you came to your wisdom and your insights personally. I'm wondering if you might want to start telling us a little bit about your own childhood growing up and the wounds or the lessons that you learned as a child and how you've dealt with those over the years.
Okay. Well, like most of us, I experienced a lot of hurt in the process of growing up, and I didn't really notice the hurt because all my focus was on the circumstances, and I didn't pay much attention to it. That's not where my focus was. And then years later, it turned out I ended up having a big issue with failure. You know, I couldn't make it with my dad. I was a failure in the eyes of my dad. So
was that the main hurt? Was feeling criticized?
That was the main hurt for me, was failure.
Okay.
So I had to be a success. So
to get your father's love.
Yes, yes. But even if I never saw my dad again, it's like, and even if I healed my relationship with my dad, I still had all that suppressed childhood hurt of being a failure.
Oh, okay.
So I was driven from the hurt of failure to become a success. And in that need to be a success, I kept creating more and more failure. And then finally,
how
there was
so?
A
point. How did that happen?
Well, it's just the way it works. Because
when
you're running from the hurt, you're operating in a state of tunnel vision. And when you're in the tunnel vision, the facts aren't that important. Don't bother me with the facts. Tell me how to avoid the hurt.
And how did that show? What was an example from your life how that showed up?
Well, it's hard to. I can generalize about it, but it's hard to think of a real specific example. But I know that in my need to be a success, I would take risks. I would do things that didn't work. I just, it was kind of like blinders on a horse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so the result was that I kept creating more and more failure. And then finally there was a point when I bought a whole bunch of real estate, highly leveraged, right before the market collapsed, which was a really dumb thing to do, but in my need to be a success, I didn't have any I didn't have any focus on what's the market doing. I didn't have any idea that that was a bad idea because I just needed to be a success. So what happened, the market collapsed, and I lost everything. I lost all my investments. I lost my office, and I lost my home.
And
it was one of the most painful times of my life, but it was probably the most wonderful. Because
isn't that funny how that is? How was it the most wonderful?
Well, because it put failure in my face so big, I couldn't escape it. I couldn't deny it.
Uh-huh.
And I remember there was this moment when I looked over my life from the perspective of failure, and just the evidence was everywhere. And there was this moment when I let it in. I didn't like it, but I surrendered to it because the evidence was so overwhelming. And I didn't realize it at the time, but the moment I made peace with the part of me called failure, my fear of failure lost its power. And simultaneously, the tunnel vision lost its power. And then shortly after that, there was this point when I had this wonderful freedom. It's like, oh, how wonderful. I'm a failure. How great. It takes all the pressure off because now I don't have to be a success. I can just be me.
Oh,
and that was the point when my life started working. After all these years, I'm still moved by thinking of that.
Wow, it's like a paradox. You became successful by not needing to be successful.
Except that the judgment of success and failure disappeared.
Right.
It's like I don't have the physical ability to judge somebody in terms of success and failure anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody says success. Okay, success compared to what? In what? I need more detail.
Yeah.
And then that freed me up enormously. And one thing I've discovered since is that we've all lost our ability to be human. As a little child, the moment we created the belief that we were not okay, we lost our ability to be ourselves. And then we spend the whole rest of our lives trying to get it back, looking for it in all the wrong places.
Mm-hmm.
And that we literally run from something that's an illusion that doesn't even exist, desperately trying to get to someplace else that doesn't exist, destroying our lives in the process.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, so well said. So well said. Wow.
Yeah. So now, when something happens and I get upset, I look to see, well, what does that say about me? Now, very powerful question. If you ever get upset, ask yourself, okay, that's the truth. Why can't I be at peace with the truth? Very powerful question.
Yeah, what does that say about me?
Yeah. And then I look at it and own it, and it just loses power.
Wonderful, yes. By seeing it, it sort of loses its hold on you.
Now, I'll give you an example. One day I said something to my wife, and it struck a nerve in her. She got upset, and then she left. But in her getting upset and attacking me, she got it off her chest, and she was fine. But I was left with the upset. So she's gone, she's fine, and I'm over here upset at what she said. And then I looked, okay, well, she said what she said. She did what she said. Why can't I be at peace with the truth? And then I looked and saw, okay, well, the emotion, what it said was that I'm just a screw-up. I can't do anything right. And in the moment I saw that, up came up all this hurt. And I felt the hurt willingly like a child. Oh, and then the moment that hurt came up, it was so obvious that the upset had nothing to do with what she said. It was just all this emotion from the past coming up. And I felt it willingly like a child, deliberately, purposefully, let it come and let it go. And then I felt this wonderful freedom. And I felt better than before the incident even happened.
Yes. That was liberating, wasn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
To see the link.
And one thing I've learned is that as a human being, we have the ability to restore our inner peace within moments, no matter what our circumstances are.
Yes, yes.
And the best way to see how that works is to look at little kids. You know, little kids get hurt, they cry and they cry, and when they get to crying, the hurt's all gone. And the thing that little kids do that's so powerful is they feel their hurt willingly. And they could care less what anybody thinks about it. And in feeling it willingly, it allows it to run its course and go. But then our culture comes along and teaches us, don't feel your hurt. You want to cry about something? I'll give you something to cry about. And then we suppress it, we shove it, and then it turns into pain, and it stays.
Yes, exactly.
And it's that,
To be able to face and embrace and to feel your hurt willingly. I love that phrase, Bill, that you used, to feel your hurt willingly. And
it's,
to see
it's the
link
key.
To early, early childhood pains in the moment like that was very liberating for you.
Oh, it was. There's one time I got a phone call saying my mother had died. I had this explosion of emotion, and the worst thing I could have done would have been to bury it, to suppress it. So I dove into it, just let it overpower me, and I sobbed and sobbed. And then there was a moment when it just lifted, and it was gone. And I remember being so thankful that I had the ability to release that hurt.
Yes.
Because otherwise I would have been in pain for a long time.
Absolutely. Very good. Very good point. Yeah. Okay, very, what great wisdom. Thank you. Well, listen, we're going to take another break here, and we'll be right back after this, so don't go away. You're listening to Bill Ferguson talk about his wisdom and his life of loving and dealing with trauma and pain. This is the How to Love Show with Dr. Mike. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this break. Welcome back to the How to Love Show with Dr. Mike. This is Dr. Michael McGee, your host. And we have with us Bill Ferguson, author, teacher, healer, who has helped people to create incredible lives. He has a series called Mastery of Life at masteryoflife.com for those who are interested. Welcome back, Bill.
Oh, it's great to be back. I'm loving our conversation with each other.
Oh, it's wonderful. You know, you have such wisdom and such a wonderful way about you. And I know you mentioned during the break that you're on your third marriage. And you know, great wisdom sometimes comes from like you said, failures and suffering. And
oh, absolutely.
Why don't you talk a little bit about your first two marriages and what you learned, what went wrong, and what you learned from those.
Great. Okay. Well, my first marriage was very, very destructive. You know, it just... we had that cycle of conflict from the very beginning. You know, I resented her, she resented me, back and forth. And then we had a very destructive, and we had two kids, and we had a very destructive divorce, and then we hated each other for years. And then there was a point 4 years after the divorce, and we were married for 7 years, so this was 11 years of blaming and resenting her. I had this realization that profoundly changed my life. First thing, I saw that underneath all my hatred and resentment and bitterness was my hurt, and underneath my hurt was my love. Great. And in my discovering, and underneath all my hurt was my love, that created a safety for me to have the realization I had the next day that profoundly changed my life. And what I saw the next day was that every painful, horrible thing she did to me was a direct result of painful, horrible things I did to her. For the very first time, I saw my 100% responsibility for the lack of love and the destruction of my marriage. And for those entire 11 years, all I could do was blame her. For the very first time, I saw it wasn't her, it was me. And that was not a fun thing to see, but it changed my life. Because when I got that I was 100% responsible for the presence or absence of love and my relationship with her, I also got that I'm 100% responsible for the presence or absence of love in my relationship with every other person on the planet. And what's ended up happening as a result of that every one of my relationships since then has worked. Now, I wouldn't necessarily get the type of relationship that I would want, but I would always be able to have a good relationship, one human being to another. So then I got married again. And we had a loving, supportive relationship for 15 years. And in order for a relationship to be great, it has to be a fit. And you can have a relationship that starts out as a fit that at another point in time is no longer a fit. So, and that's what happened to us. And she asked for a divorce, and I granted her the divorce. You know, I went along with it, but we never stopped the love. We just changed the form of the relationship, but we always maintained that love, one human being to another, and our property settlement took 5 minutes. Because I was interested in her well-being, and she was interested in my well-being. And then now, this was like long, long time ago, and we still call each other on our birthdays, and we still love each other, but the form has changed.
That's beautiful.
See, but by seeing my 100% responsibility changed my life.
Oh, yes, that's profound, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's true with everybody. Relationships are not 50-50, they're 100-100. When I was a divorce attorney, very rarely did I see the other person. But when my client changed how he or she was towards the other person, it changed how the other person responded in return. So what ended up happening, 15% of my clients canceled their divorce and got back together. And of the 85% that did divorce, virtually all of them did it as friends.
That's beautiful.
That's how I learned. It only takes one person to heal a relationship. And again, you may not get the type of relationship you want. But you can always have the love one human being to another.
Yeah, yeah. Wow, that is so profound. Now, I take it you went to law school and then became an attorney after college, is that right?
Yeah, I went to law school and then went into the Marine Corps for 4 years. Captain Bill. And then after the Marine Corps, then I came back and started practicing law. And I started out mainly as a corporate tax estate planning attorney. And then I started doing divorce on the side. And then that just got bigger and bigger. And then before long, I was doing nothing but divorce.
And what drew you to that work?
Well, it just initially I started because I didn't like going to trial. You know, initially I did it, you know, because it made the legal work easier. And then I realized that also that if I really want to do the best job for my clients, you know, I need to support them and heal in their relationship.
Yeah, yeah.
Because when you've got that cycle of conflict, you can end up having a bitter fight over who gets the toothpaste.
Yeah, yeah.
But when you've got that, when you have the love one human being to another, it's like when I got my second divorce, you can do the property settlement in 5 minutes.
Yeah, you had a loving instinct to help heal people during that time, which people don't think about that with divorce attorneys. That makes you really quite unique. At least in terms of what people often think of, in what can be very nasty and toxic and very
yes, and it's so painful, so avoidable,
traumatic.
I had a number of people came to me that had spent over $250,000 in attorney's fees, and they weren't any better, any closer to the divorce than when they started.
Yeah, so traumatic, so damaging, so
and
destructive.
It's just, and
you are
so
healing
avoidable
for these people. Wow. Yeah.
And another thing I learned is that, like, no matter how bad it gets, you know, in a divorce, we have the ability to make it a whole lot worse very quickly.
Or, like you said, one person can also heal the relationship, too.
Yes.
That's really,
yes,
yeah.
And everything you do as an adversary creates more adversariness.
Right.
See, normally the way we resolve disputes is like I draw sides against you, and then I fight to have my side win. But everything I do to have my side win forces you to fight me to make sure that doesn't happen.
Right. It just creates conflict.
It creates conflict. So everything you do as an adversary creates adversariness against you.
Yes, yes.
So the way you turn that around is look for solutions that work for you and the other person. And the thing that I found is that when you look for the solutions that work for everybody, you can find them. But
yeah,
we don't
yeah.
normally find them because
there.
We don't bother to look for them.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, such wisdom. So tell us a little bit about your life now. What are you doing now, and how can people find out about you, and how do you maintain your practice of love these days?
Okay. Well, I used to do a lot of weekend workshops, but with the virus stuff, I'm not doing that. So I'm mainly doing individual work with people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I work with them in resolving problem areas and having their life work. And mm-hmm. you know, and if anybody wants to find out more about me, go to the website masteryoflife.com. You know, and there's a section in there on articles, and it just has a lot of really good information on it.
So, masteryoflife.com.
Yeah.
Yes, and you have books that you've written, is that right?
Yes, there's three books I've written. The one of them was How to Heal a Painful Relationship, and that was the book I was on Oprah for. You know, and that's about what I learned as a divorce attorney, about how to heal the relationship one human being to another. And then the book Get Your Power Back, that's about how do you find and heal these inner issues that mess everything up. And then there's a third book, Miracles Are Guaranteed, which is about how to live in that experience of love, how to have that in all of your life.
Oh, boy. Well, this is good reading for all of us to go to sort of tap into your wonderful wisdom. Bill, I want to thank you so much for sharing yourself with us. And your words are very inspiring and very full of wisdom. Great, inspiring stuff that you're talking about. And I also see that you have a Mastering of Life course that is available as well.
Yes, yeah, it's a program. There's actually 51 lessons, and each lesson has an article and a short video, and it literally walks you through the steps of transforming your life. You know, it has you discover why your life is the way that it is. It walks you through the process of healing these inner issues that mess everything up, and then it creates an action plan for how do you handle your life, how do you handle the things in your life that don't work, how do you create a great life. And it's one of the best things I've ever done, so I'm real proud of it.
Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. Well, again, thank you so much for being on the show and being with us, Bill. And best luck to you in your work and in helping others to heal. Thank you so much. You're listening to the How to Love Show with Dr. Mike here. Stay tuned. I'll be right back with you after this break for our conclusion. Welcome back to the How to Love Show with Dr. Mike. Dr. Michael McGee, you're your host. Wonderful having Bill Ferguson on our show, wasn't it? He is so full of wisdom, and I was just so struck by and inspired by him and what he had to say. Clearly has a great deal of – he's a very, very gifted man and very intelligent and has a very good heart and is really, really doing great work for the world in what he's doing. You know, we didn't hear too much about his past childhood, but he mentioned growing up with a fear of failure. And that being sort of a key or central trauma for him, and that really affecting the way that he lived his life, because what it created for him was, it sounds like, a compulsion to work to succeed, because it wasn't just good enough to just be who he was, just as he is, that there was that extra compulsion to strive. And I think so much of us feel that in some way or another. And what is at the root of that is again, just an experience in childhood where we are hurt somehow that we take in as meaning that we are somehow unlovable, that we're not good enough, that we're not enough, that we're not worthwhile, that we're not worthy, that we're insufficient in some way. And Bill made such a good point, is that as children, we really take the hurts, the childhood hurts, the disappointments, the failures, the harmful comments or even abuse that we can experience growing up, and we take that in on ourselves. And we take it in and we assume that because of the harm that we experience, the hurt that we experience, that we are somehow unlovable. And then our life then becomes an agenda of living to kind of cover that up or to treat that. It's almost like the life agenda becomes not so much to go out and enjoy life and to love others as much as it gets dominated by trying to manage that pain of being unlovable somehow, which makes us very reactive and in a way kind of self-centered in a way, because our concern is with ourselves and with managing this childhood pain that we carry with us moment by moment. And I think what Bill said was really profound and really very important, which is that he spoke about really looking at and being at peace with the truth, not only the truth of what's going on right now, here and now, with another human being that we're interacting with, but the truth of how the hurts or disappointments of the present, how they may link back to those childhood hurts. So important to see that. And so important to go back and to, as Bill said, to feel the hurt willingly. To feel the hurt willingly. Not only the hurt of the present moment, but also the hurt of the past. We can't heal it if we can't feel it. Most of us try to seal it. We try to seal over our pain. We seal over the hurt rather than feel the pain, feel the hurt. And really, that's able to see that hurt and to feel that hurt willingly, and then to grieve and to cry and to hold that with compassion. And as Bill said, in compassion for our own pain and hurt, we can also then have compassion for the pain and hurt of other people. We have all wounded, and we have all been wounded, and it's so important to see this. And as Bill said, with great wisdom, is to really to hold and embrace all of this with acceptance and with appreciation of all the goodness and love that there exists despite the hurt and pain. So I hope that you all enjoyed Bill's words as much as I did. And we look forward to continuing with another wonderful guest next week. I wish you a week of peace, acceptance and appreciation, and of holding yourself with your hurt and pain with deep compassion. This is Dr. Mike here at the How to Love Show. Dr. Michael McGee. You can learn more about me and visit my website at howtolove.com. Until next week, stay well, be well.